Okay. Hi, good morning. Sorry, I had some technical challenges here, but I think we're good to go. So let's get going. So we had the quiz due this morning. Actually, let's just open the quiz and see how we're doing. Oh, sorry, nope. That is my problem this morning. For some reason, my laptop doesn't want to connect to Adderall. But from what I've seen, question one is more or less everyone got it right. So for question one, we are given that code over there. We have a register, XY, X being the input port, Y being the output port, with two registers inside, A and B, each of them 64 bit. A is initialized to value 2, while B is initialized to a value that we have to find now. I call it W in my derivation here. And then we have the math relationship there, the connections between the ports, right? So the input to register A is staked here, XA, input to register A, equals to the output of A plus the output of A. So it's a 2A, kind of. And then the input of register B equals to the output of register B plus the input, plus the input of register A. And I made this little drawing here. So these are the same signal here. These two are the same signal. This is the output of register A. And they are just added twice, passed in there. Then that same value, morning, is passed as an input to B. So at the very beginning, and I call this clock zero, in the slides it was called start, same thing, right? We have value 2 at A and value W at B. W is what we want to find out. That was the problem. And then we have the initial inputs. So we would have this 2 plus 2, which is 4, and then 4 plus W. And that would update, so these two values would pass at the next clock cycle, right? So we would have 4 and 4 plus W. I'm gonna change color for the next clock cycle. And then 4 plus 4 is 8, and then 8 plus what we have at the register B is 4 plus W, so that's our value. So at the second clock cycle, they would update over there. So then we know that the final value is 1024. Doing a little bit of math, we get 1012. Most of you got this right. Good job. Any questions on this? No. Now for quiz question two, we had addresses in memory and their values. And the question was to find out the value of these bits, 12 to 20, starting with, assuming that the PC, the program counter, is set at value 101 in memory. The first task you have to do correctly, and that's where I guess you can go wrong, is to respect the little endianness appropriately. So least significant bits correspond to lower addresses. Lower addresses, least significant bits. So in that table, we had lower addresses starting with 101. And then we had these values. And 34 was right here. And then 56 was the next one. And this is hex. So we write it like this. This would be all the 80 bits, which is 10 bytes, right? This is one byte. This is another byte, and so on. So one hex value is 4 bits. Sometimes this is confusing. And then So for example, 0 to 8, one byte would be 3 and 4, right? Then 8 to 12 would be just 6. So that's four bits, 8 to 12. Includes 8, excludes 12. So it's actually 8 to 11, right? It does not include 12. So it's in other notations I've seen in that this was at least in my high school, we used, for example, 8 and then not a square bracket. So that's how I've seen it in other notations. But anyway. And then for bytes 12 to 20, this is 8 bits. We will have the next values, which is this one's here. I've noticed that some of you got this wrong. Questions on this? Cool. So I want to go through a little bit of recap and, go ahead, you have a question.
Question three in the quiz says no right answer. Like the mean is a zero. Is it just none of the answers are selected as right?
No. So oddly, my device, I cannot pull up the quiz. For some reason, I cannot connect to Cavalier. But no, there is a right answer.
The key is currently wrong.
Oh, okay, the key is currently wrong. Didn't notice that. Yeah?
Do you mind explaining question four on the quiz?
Yeah. Can you?
Oh, wait, yeah, you can.
Sorry. Just remind me what the question is, please.
Oh, yeah. It's the one about the non-call and jump CPU, and you add in new instruction, asking how you change the PC logic.
Yeah, so we changed the NOP instruction to have two bytes. Since the instruction code length is different, it's now not only one byte, it's two bytes, we have to increment the program counter by two. So that is a change. Previously, so with the previous NOP, we would just increment by one, because it would be just one byte. While with the instruction having two bytes length, the program counter would be incremented by two. Actually, the next slide is exactly on this. So notice how, well, this is actually incrementing NOP. We have the program counter, which is a register, 64-bit, and we add one to go to the next instruction, to the next NOP. So if we had the instruction 0 and then 1 and so on, and this would be a NOP, and this will also be a NOP, then we would execute the first NOP, and this would be, this is past the value of the program counter is passed to the instruction memory, and this is our instruction memory that I just drew here. So by incrementing by one, I'm going to the next instruction. So then if my instruction would take two bytes, then I would have a value here, let's say 0x04, and I would have a NOP which has two instructions. It would have a 0xf0 and also another 0. So then 0x05 would be that value. And to go to the next instruction, I would have to add by 2. So I have to go to 0x06. That is one of the changes we have to do. And then for the second part of the question, do we have to change the stat? Not so much. So the second part, the stat more or less stays the same. It's still a NOP. We still simply proceed forward in terms of action.
So about like not changing the stat, wouldn't you have to like add something saying like if it was like this new instruction, just like say stat A, okay, and would that not count as changing the logic, or like sort of.
I see what you mean. So the stat is a max, and the comparison, the what we switch on, kind of, what do we do the comparison for the marks would have to change. Is that what you mean?
Right.
So I kind of agree with that. So even though it's not a big change, it is a little change, right? We don't change the behavior of the of the action, but we have to change the input to the stack. Yeah. So if you did write that in the comment, I think you will get credit. Yeah. Yes.
For question 5, it asks about what you should change the logic for the stat signal to work. Answer choice A said setting it in the exact same way, and answer choice C said doing nothing. How are those different from one another?
I think doing nothing just meant that. Like the stat does zero action. I think that's...
Like the logic doesn't need to change from what it was previously. That's what it means. Doing nothing means logic doesn't change from previously.
But then staying the...
If you read the option, it's setting it the exact same way it was set for a regular option, which it wouldn't have done before.
Yeah.
So the new instruction has a different opcode than the old one.
Yeah, but then Charles, there is a minor change, so.
Right. Yeah. So the option, if you have the placeholder up, or is that not possible right now?
One more time, please.
You have the placeholder up.
I can't.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with.
Okay.
Yeah. Can't connect. Wonderfully. I think if you have a reasonable comment in the comment of the question, you will get most of the points. The intuition there was that it's a new instruction with a different opcode, which you have to of course take into account, but then it does the same action. It's still a knob. So there is no change at the action taken. So I want to go through a little bit of recap and a bit of motivation of what are we really doing. So what we're doing is we're building a computer. We're assembling together, we're constructing a computer, the hardware itself. And I often got asked by my family, you know, so you study computer engineering, do you know how to make a computer? Well, I think after a few of these classes, or after this class in general, I think you will know enough to not just build a computer, but think with this skill and use this skill in your future careers. So a computer at the most basic is a counter. That's why we started with a counter. So what do we have on this slide? Charles went over this last week on Tuesday. We have first of all a register. How do we define a register? X, Y, minor, lower, in this little language that we're using in HCL, we define it this way, and then count is the name of the register. We have 3 bits initialized to 0, and it has an input and an output. The way we express the logic is by writing this statement here that the input of the register will be equal to the output of the register plus 1, and that is equivalent to what we drew here, and this block implements the plus 1 logic. In this slide, we are aware that the program counter, this is going to be, the way we implement a program counter, and a program counter is something we use. So far, we have just a counter, and a program counter is something at the core of a processor, and you can think of the history of von Neumann and the way that we broke the Enigma machine, Enigma coder and encoding machine. So we had this program counter, a program in memory, and we always fetch instructions from memory one by one and execute them, right? That's the fundamental principle. So how do we do that? And I will try to clean this. So program counter is a register, in our case 64-bit. We initialize it to some value. Let's assume it's zero, but ideally it's where the program begins. That's the initial value. And typically we increment, in this case, by one, because we are implementing only the no operation instruction. So we don't really do anything. We just increment the program counter and go to the next instruction. The value of the program counter is the address of the instruction memory. So what is the instruction memory? It's a memory where we pass an address and we receive a value. And that value is our instruction values, it's data. The input of the program counter equals to the output of the program counter plus one, and then PC being our fixed name for our program counter in the language is assigned this this value, this output, and PC is right here, is the value right there. That's what it means. And status is our program flow, which currently has the value AOK. Now, additionally, two more things we did is we looked at MUX and a jump. And I only have the slide, the recap slide for MUX. So another very useful hardware component that we are using in computers is, you know, to make decisions, to go one path or another, right? And in this case, from the instruction memory, we extract an operation code. How do we do that? We have an ISA, which specifies where in the instruction the values are. Either those are registers or constants or the operation itself. For example, in this case, we extract the operation, is it a knock or is it a hold? And then we also have a default action. And this implements this MUX. So each of these three options are what we have at the input of the MUX, and then the kind of the switch mechanism is what we select on, and these are the conditions here. And based on these conditions, the stat register will be updated with this values, one of these inputs. Yes.
So why the item bytes is always extracting 4 to 8 bits?
Why the item bytes is extracting the 4 to 8 bits? That is where the program, the instruction code is. And I do have that prepared, at least that is ready. So for NOP, this is bit 0 to 4, and then this is bit 4 to 8, right? And that's what we are using. Yeah. So this is where this field here in this table is where the instruction is included. Yeah. And this is different for different ISAs. But in this Y86 instruction set architecture, in this field, that was the decision of the ISA architect. In this field is where we encode the instruction, always.
So we're always looking for the opcode bits in the table.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, always. When we read an instruction, we pass a value from the program counter to the instruction memory, and it gives us the instruction data, 80 bits, 10 bytes. And then we look in the first lower, least significant, in this byte, in the least significant byte, byte 0 from the right side, at bit 4 to 8. And we always extract that bit and observe, what is the instruction? What are we actually doing? Yeah, are we adding? Are we jumping? Are we doing nothing? And a program is a sequence of these instructions, millions. So we just keep doing this. And I find this quite fascinating, that everything is independent of each other. You know, on one end, you have a list of, a sequence of instructions that are just, you know, independent. They're just there. And then on another end, you have a register that keeps incrementing by a good amount. And on another, in another region here, we have, you know, this mux that decides what to do. And then further, we'll see there is, you know, the action itself. All these are independent mechanisms that were architected to work together, and they work together well. And you can see in software, we're doing so many awesome things, right? So at the core, we have this little independent, well-working, well-defined mechanism, but then put together, we get presentations and machine learning and, you know, self-driving cars and rockets flying and satellites and everything, right? I think it's pretty cool. So let's go next. So let's try to implement the add. I think Charles started this last time. I'll just quickly resume that. So an add instruction adds the value from register RXX in this case with RYY and stores it in RYY. And it's encoded with 2 bytes. So going here, add is part of the, it's part of the operation here, right? So we have, you know, not much here. Then we have value 6 and the 2 registers. And that is what we see here. Value 6, 0, just written the other way around. So it's 2 byte, knob. And for now, let's assume that we are only doing add. We have a computer that only does add, a processor that only does add. So page down. And since we're working with registers, we have to use a register file, meaning we better use a register file. And let's start learning about that. So a register file, we are just going to use the existing an existing implementation. We will not ask you to implement one. And that's easy for most of everyone, because in the end, you could do it yourself. You could say, you know, register and R0 to R15 or to 14, and have a multiplexer that writes to the right register index and reads from the right register index. That's exactly what's happening inside this module. We will have it defined this way. There are 2 interfaces for read. So there is 2 indexes. And this is sort of like an address, except it's a register index. I'm not going to call it an address. I'll just call it register index. It can be register 0, register 1, register any of them. So you could have R1 here, R2 there. And then correspondingly, you will get the values. So this is an index. And then I'll just put, say, VR1, VR2. And there are actually conventions there. So they're corresponding. Similarly, we can write registers. So we can say, where do we write? I'm going to call this write 1 and write 2. Those are also indexes. And what data do we write? So data that goes into 1 and data goes into 2, into register, whichever one you select. So these are indexes, right? We can read 2 registers or write 2 registers, or just 1. We'll see later. Questions about the register file so far? In terms of timing, this is very important as well. The values happen in one. The action happens in 1 clock cycle. So at the rising edge of the clock, the values that are at the input will be taken into account, will be considered, and will be, you know, if we're doing a read, in the same clock cycle, we're going to get the output as soon as the propagation, the value propagate. And with write, similarly. So we see here at the rising edge for the read, data input, or for the write, sorry. We have a data input. So this data will go into the register where it's written. And inside the register, already after the rising edge of the clock, the value inside the register will be updated. So that's the timing. Additionally, maybe we don't want to write to a register. Maybe, you know, since this, the register is a hardware component, and there always have to be values to it, and it's often dangerous to, you know, maybe we don't want to update a value. A value needs to stay there, and what do we do? You know, what should we set those values to be so that nothing happens? And there is a safe register where we can direct reads and writes, and if we basically register number 15, if we read from it, we're always going to read a zero, no matter what we write to it before, and if we write to it, we're, nothing will happen. That value will just be discarded. So that's register 15. And it's useful when we have actions that we don't want to happen. So we can use the marks there and just skip actions, skip losing data from the register file. In HCLRS, these are fixed names that we can use, and it will automatically use the register file. So for input read, register source A, register source B, those are fixed, and it will correspondingly give us register output A, register output B. For writing, register destination E and M, those are the addresses, not the addresses, the indexes where we write, and the destination index, and the output correspondingly, the input correspondingly will be input E and input M. So destination E, input E, written to the register, whichever its index is to. So now that we looked at the register file, questions about register file? Yes?
I have two. Do we just not, do we like ignore the off signal then? Do we have to indicate that at all in the register file?
So the clock signal is going to not be ignored. The register file will be updated. So the question is, do we ignore the clock signal?
We have to indicate the clock signal in the register file.
We don't have to indicate it in the code we write, because it's technically still a register, and the register will always be updated at the rising edge clock. Now, it will not be ignored, if that's the question. So on hardware, the clock will be driving the register file update. The inputs arriving at the register file will only be considered at the rising edge of the clock.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then also, can there be more read register numbers and write register numbers than just two?
We will see that for this ISA, this is enough. Reading two registers. If you look at the ISA itself, we only use two registers at most. So this will be enough to read and to write. Yes, please.
So when you're putting a register number as part of your argument, or I guess playing the
index, so the index, should it be decimal? Is that a question?
Yeah.
So you can go up to register 15, which, yes, it's decimal, but in hex, no reason not to use hex. So E, E, F, yeah. And I think if you use a higher number, that register just doesn't exist. I think you will get an error, because there should only be 15 registers in the register file, as defined in the ISA. So the question is, can we feed the indexes that are large? Is that a question? That are?
Yeah, so for example, like register DSTD, if you wanted to do like R11 or something like that, the octo according to like Y,
either value is fine. So would you use hex or decimal? Either value is fine.
Okay.
Yeah, shouldn't matter. Go with hex. Okay. Yeah, but I mean, why would it matter? It's, and then it's bits, it's an index, it's a, there's a small decoder in, think of it as a little circuit that decodes the input value, and it's 4 bits, right? The register is encoded with 4 bits. So it's a 4-bit binary value that is decoded and ends up pointing to the right register.
All right, so it doesn't matter?
No. So now that we have MUX, register file, program counter, instruction memory, add, let's try to do an add, a CPU that adds. So we start with our blocks. We connect the program counter to the instruction memory, and then the instruction memory gives us the instruction value, right? And we can take the values that we need from there. So we can, first of all, take, okay, this is an add, that's the bit 4 to 8, and we can also take the 2 register values. So going back to the instruction, we can take the 6, that's an add, and we can take the value of RA and value of RB. And then we pass this, what do we want to do with these values? To pass them to the register files, to the register file, to the read source. So we want to read those values and then add them, right? So we pass these values in there, and we add them. And what do we do next? What do we do with those values? So the instruction tells us that we take the value of source A, or of R, the first register, add it with the value of the second register, and then store it in the value of the second register. So how do we store? We do a write, right? So we are going to probably pass this value over there, because it's the same destination as the source of the B. And what is the value? Is the result from here, right? Let's see if we did it right. We did. Cool. Questions about this so far? And let's look at an example. So we have 2 instructions. So this is our program. We have 2 instructions at address 0 and at address 2. We are adding RAX with RDX, storing it in RDX. That's first. And at first we have value 0, so we are going to be taking RAX, which is index 0. This is the index of RAX, and it has value 10. So we have 10 right here, right? And then RBX is 20. Well, it's index 2. That's another. RDX. RDX is index 2, right there, and it has value 30. And we add them together, 10 plus 30 gives us 40, and it is going at the right of RDX itself. So RDX will become 40. When will that happen? So we are currently at the clock cycle where we passed 0 to the instruction memory, we read from the instruction memory that value of the instruction. We split that value into add RAX and RDX, and then we pass those values to the register file in the same clock cycle. We got the values from the register file, the register values, and we added them, and we have the sum. And all of this happened in one clock cycle. And that value is now ready at the input, but it's not yet written, because the next clock cycle has to happen. Yeah.
Just to kind of clarify, is it a clock
Yeah, it is a bit confusing. Let's just throw out. So we are only We're only doing a processor that works in one clock cycle, a single cycle processor in this lecture. In a future lecture, we will start splitting it over multiple clock cycles. That's called pipelining. But that's where I'm trying to highlight. It's a lot of stuff happening in one clock cycle. So what really happens? So during this clock cycle, this edge here, this rising edge, the value from the PC, which was zero, was passed to the instruction memory. We are still in the same clock cycle. The instruction memory received it, and like you're probably thinking, there's a propagation delay, and the clock rising edge already happened. We ignore that. We are still in the same clock cycle. The work is still happening. So then this value from the instruction memory was given to us, same clock cycle, we're splitting it, and splitting is easy, right? It's just a few wires going in different directions, for example, into some multiplexers. So that doesn't take a lot of time. There is no processing there. It's just split some wires. Then we pass these values that we took from the instruction memory, right? We pass them to the register file as the source, as the index of the registers. And then the register files has to decode them, read the value from the register, and give it here at the output of the register file. We're still in the same clock cycle. So we're still maybe somewhere here, kind of going through. And then we're adding. Still the same clock cycle. The add propagation delay will also take some time, but we haven't. Our clock cycle needs to be pretty long, right? We have to accommodate all this action in one clock cycle. So we can do that by having a long clock cycle. And then the output is ready, but we're not able to write it back in the same clock cycle because we know that the value at the input, next value, this is the next value, will be actually read at this next clock cycle. So this 40 will be happening. The 40 will be updated in the register file at this time. And it will be ready for that clock cycle to be used. We will actually be using it in the next instruction. Now another thing that's happening is that we are updating the program counter independent, like I was highlighting before. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to think. So the question is more to certify that. So the question is, we write back into the register file, that action will take place at the next clock cycle. Or that is this a good way to think about it? I think so. So we're reading and using the values, one clock cycle, and then putting the values for next, that would be, so we have the value, but then writing it back, that is the next clock cycle. And it's probably like you want an argument, wait, why can't we just assume that we're still there at the rising clock edge? Well, we're not. I mean, we did so much. You could think that maybe this adder wasn't really driven by the clock, but I think it was. There are ways to make this happen that the values will somewhat propagate. There are ways to design a circuit that will allow you to do this, to have, like blocking and non-blocking assignment. That's what I call it in Verilog. There are values that, until they're not calculated, next values cannot begin to calculate. That's what blocking would mean. Let's not go in that aspect. Yeah, yeah. So then we have a second instruction. So one action we have to do is to increment the program counter. I thought we would do it, but we do it here. We add two, right? But I'll go back. So we increment the program counter by two because this is an add. Add is 2 bytes long, so we have to move to the next instruction. That's what we do here. And here we're adding RBX to RDX. So RBX is different from RIX, right? a slide for it. I don't know. So I'll just use the same one. So RBX, what is the value of RBX? It's 20. And it hasn't changed. We haven't changed that. And we will be adding 20 to the RDX. RDX, we've just updated it to 40. So we will, I'll use the next slide as a. So we just updated RDX to 40. We are now executing the second instruction where we are passing RBX and RDX. So RDX is here, and this is RBX, which is 20. So we have 20 plus 40, we get 60, and that comes as the value that we are writing. We're updating RDX, so it will become 60. RBX stays unchanged, and RAX, I believe, also unchanged. So stays that. Questions about the adder and the one thing we're still missing.
Can you specify PC?
PC, yes. So PC at this time is 2. It has to be 2. And it's not clear because we're missing something. What are we missing?
How about after cycle 1?
We are missing.
What's the value of PC after cycle 1?
Right. Oh. So PC was 0 at the first clock cycle. And so PC was 0, and we got a 40 on the result of the add, it was 0 at the rising edge, but it is then incremented by 2. So at this next rising edge is going to be 2. Yeah. So the question was, what is the value? How does the value of PC change also respective to of time? At the beginning, it was 0. We used that value 0 to read from the instruction memory. We did all that work. And while doing all that work, we also incremented independently the program count, the PC, by 2. Yes. Exactly, yeah. So the add instruction is 2 bytes, that's why we add 2. Here is a clean version of it with the plus 2 as well. And we just went through that. So how will this look in our language, in HCL? Let's say we actually declare a register, call it PC. We've seen this before. We assign the input to the register, the output plus 2, and we actually assign PC the value output of the PC, which is going to be this assignment here. So that is that. I think there's actually green colors for that. Yeah. So then we pass that value to the instruction memory. The instruction memory gives us the instruction value, which we split. We realize this is an add, and those are the two registers we are interested in. So what do we have in terms of hardware? We have a wire called opcode. We have another few wires that have the value of register A and register B, RA and RB in this case. They're just called RA and RB. Operation code will be the bits 4 to 8 from the I10 bytes, and you know that this is the fixed name of the instruction memory output. We assign RA to be 12 to 16, bit 12 to 16, and RB bit 8 to 12. Why do we do that? Again, based on this. So RB is, in this case, least significant, RA is somewhat more significant. So RA gets 12 to 16, RB gets 8 to 12. And so these are our, and now this is the register file assignment. This is a new, right? So register source A gets the value RA. So we put RA here. Register source B gets RB. Register destination also gets RB. And then what is the next? So register input E will be the sum of the outputs. So this and this. Register output A plus register output B. So this is the plus. Questions about the HCL code? Oh yeah, what?
So this all happens in one cycle?
The write to the value will be updated at RB in the next web cycle. But other than that, yes. Everything, all of this. Yes, so does this all happen in one clock cycle? Yes, it's a lot of work for one clock cycle, but this happens all in one clock cycle. This is a single cycle processor implementation. Yes, please.
So for one cycle, it stops at the next cycle.
I couldn't hear, I'm sorry. It stops at next and updates at... Yes, so the destination register, which happens to be RB, during this first clock cycle, the one which we are running during the first clock cycle, that destination stays as it was. The value stays as it was. As soon as the next rising edge is occurs, whichever value is here at the input will be stored, will be updating the value of that register. And that will happen. Yeah, so all the action happens in one clock cycle, except the update of the value happens at the next, and it's ready to be used. Go ahead, yes.
Yeah, I still don't get how do you get RDX equals to 60 after cycle 2.
RDX?
Previous slide?
Previous slide. You, how do we get 60 in this case? Let's go through from the beginning. Cycle zero. We pass, the program counter value to the instruction memory, and that value is zero, and the instruction memory gives us an instruction. That is this. And we decode it, and it turns out it's an add queue RAX plus RB, RDX store into RDX. So this will do what? This will do RDX equals RAX plus RDX. Agree? Okay. Now we take the value of RAX and place it there. Value of RDX, not the value, the index, and pass it as a source. So we specify the source to the register, and the register tells us, I see the source that you want to read, here is the values in those registers. What is the values? So RAX is 10, and RDX, right, is 30. 10 plus 30, 40 comes all the way here, right? And this is the action in one clock cycle. And I will switch colors to something else. Let's go purple this time. And we increment the counter plus 2. So we had 0, now we're gonna have 2 at the PC. So this is the 2, and we pass that value to the instruction memory. It gets a 2 right here, right? And it gives us that instruction. Add Q RBX RDX. So again, RDX is the one updated, will be RBX plus RDX. So we put RBX here, RBX, the index, and RDX here and also here. So previously we also used RDX, right? Okay, so what are the values? So we are now at this cycle, right? We already updated RDX to 40, right? RBX is 20. So we'll have 20 plus RDX, which is 40. 20 plus 40 will be 60. Yeah, and then 60 will come here. And at the next rising edge, which will be, let's go with the orange because we are who's, we had another two, right? Because we just did an add, so we'll have instruction four. We don't know what instruction four is, but this 60 will be updated. So after cycle two, which is, you know, four, right? We will have that value 60. Does that answer your question?
Yeah,
all clear? Thank you. Questions about the HCL code? Add processor in HCL. I'm glad. There are some differences in the book. We have to use a default for MUX. We are going to be implementing our own ALU. The book uses a provided version. We are using wires. The book uses bool and int. Wires give us, I think, a clearer understanding of the bits we have. And then there are some values in the book that we'll try to have better naming for. Let's look at ALU, since we just mentioned ALU. What is an ALU? It stands for arithmetic logic unit. So the arithmetic part suggests that it does some math, some arithmetic, and then it's implemented in logic, and it's a block on its own. We have a somewhat similar shape, or if you think of the inputs and signals, it looks somewhat like a MUX. You have some signals coming in, there's a select, except instead of selecting the input, you're selecting what operation happens. That's really all. So the input A and B, and maybe there will be more inputs, all of them are used, and then this select operation selects the operation that will happen, either an add or a subtract, or an XOR, and so on. And questions about the gate itself, the ALU component? We've seen that in our processor we had addition here, and also here at the program counter. So we have two adds. Do we use two ALUs? So the answer is no. I want to highlight two ideas here, so I'll write them down. One is that an ALU does one operation in one clock cycle. We cannot do both additions with one ALU in the same clock cycle. And then second, just to add the program counter, to add a little value to the program counter, we don't need as much as an ALU. We can just use a small adder. So we will use a small adder to increment the program counter. We will use an ALU for implementing the op operation. Okay, so here is an exercise, and gives me a break, gives you some interaction. So let's say we wanted to make an add plus no operation. So a CPU that doesn't do just add, it does add and also the no op. We've seen the no op, we've seen the add. What changes do we have to do to to have that. So where would we need maxes? That is the question. And we have this options here. Take a few minutes, discuss among yourselves. Need more time? I've heard a yes. It's okay, if you need more time, take your time. Sorry, I interrupted. So, since I interrupted, anyone thinks it's E? Who thinks it's E? E? Nope. Nice. A? You think it's A? Okay, some hands. B? All right, we have a few B. C and D. All right. I think we have quite a balanced answers. Well, many of these are true. So let's go one by one. And I'll go with E because that's the, I think, the easiest one. If you look at the processor itself, so E states that we will also update something here, like we will put a max, something like in this line. And we don't really need to, right? Assuming we have the right program counter value, we don't need to. So none of you, most of you didn't raise the hand for D, for E, and that is correct. We don't have to change E. So E is false, right? We don't change E. Now, of course, we do change B, the PC registers input. And why is that the case? So for the NOP, we increment the counter by the program counter by 1, because the NOP instruction length is 1. And then for the add, we increment by 2. So we have to tell somehow the process counter by how much we increment. So we're gonna have a 1, a 2, a little max. This will be the opcode, right? And that value will be in the counter, in the increment. And we'll go into the counter. So B is true. We have to update that. Well, let's look at A. One or both of the register file register number to read inputs. So you might say for the add, we read the registers, and then for the NOP, we don't read. We don't want to read the registers. Now, if you read some registers, as long as you don't use them, they don't really affect the change, it doesn't matter. You know, if you read something, you didn't really, it's not like a read erase, it's just read, you can read them again. So nothing really happens. So you could say that, you know, A is not, you could leave it, it's safe for both, for the NOP and for the add. I mean, if we need it for the add, it's safe for the NOP. But also, you might want to make it more efficient. For example, if it's a NOP, let's read the zero value, the register 15. So you might want to pass register 15 there. So that is okay. Now, C and D, one of the register file, register number to write inputs. So number to write inputs, and then value to write inputs. So this is the destination, and this is the value itself. Now, one of them has to be, so for the NOP, for the add, we need it. We need to write the addition result. For the add, we need to write the addition result. But then for the NOP, we don't want to change anything. We don't want to do anything, right? How do we do that? We can have a max. So let's go back to the... We can have a max saying that let's update either this register or 15. So F, I think. F is 15. It's not B, it's F. And then this code will come from the opcode. So in this way, for the NOP, we'll not update. We will write the value. We'll still do the add if we still have some. We always have some values there, right? Always have some read values. So there will always be some values coming out of the register files, except whatever we write will go to register 15, so nothing happens. Alternatively, what we could do, and I'll delete this and try to do the other one. Alternatively, for the add, we are usually updating, you see it's like the same register, so we could take this value and make sure that it's written back. So for the add, we will use this value, the result from the add, but then for the NOP, we will write back the same value. And who controls this? Similarly, the opcode controls the max. So the select is from the opcode. So that's what this option says. So this is either one of them has to be selected, either C or D. So either you have to do the C strategy where you write to register F, or the value you write is the register value itself. You write it back. Go ahead.
So for option, if you could go back to like the original. So for option B, which is like the change PC, is that like changing, like adding a mux sort of in that loop around where you have the plus two? Is it like having a...
Sorry, the plus two?
Yeah, so is that what option B is saying? It's like adding a mux before the plus
yes,
two?
Yes, exactly, yeah. So you would have a mux. I'll make it like that. And it's either going to be a one or a two. Yeah.
And that's also influenced by the opcode.
Yes, it is also influenced by the opcode. Perfect. Yeah. Yes?
I just want to make sure. So you definitely need at least C or D, but if you choose one of them, you don't need the other.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So the question, the first question, I have to repeat for the recording. First question, it is either C or D sufficient? Yes. You either change the index where you write or the value that you write to the correct register. And then the second question. Sorry.
It was about the answer A.
Yeah.
Did you say that we don't need a mux there?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then the second question, for A, now I'll go back to A. Reading, it doesn't change the state of, since reading doesn't change the state of the machine, the processor itself, for the add, we need to read, and then for the NOP, if we read, no harm. There is no change, so doing nothing or reading and not using the values is fine. At the same time, if we want to be more power efficient, for example, we don't want to read those values, perhaps we would like to be more secure, we don't want those values out of the register, then we would actually implement read from F, read from the register F. Yeah. So we have 5 minutes left. Let's try to start the move to register. And there are several instructions. There is immediate to register, register to register, and memory to register. And let's look at memories. So we looked already at instruction memory. For instruction memory, we pass an address to the instruction memory, and we get that 10 bytes of instruction data. Similarly, we have a data memory. The data memory has two features. We can read and write to it. Read works the same as the instruction memory. We give it an address, input to read, so an address, and then we get the data output, a data at that address. And the data is always 64 bytes, bits, 64 bits. And in order to read, we have a signal called read enable. When we want to write, we have a signal called write enable. And similarly, we supply an address and a data to write. This is a data to write. So when we read, we just give an address, we get the data out. When we write, we give an address and data to write, we don't get data out. Data out is some value we don't need. In terms of timing, this is still a one clock cycle, so same clock cycle memory. So we're at the rising edge of the clock, the inputs that are at the memory will be taken into account, will be processed by the data memory, and the value either at the output or the internal value at that address will be updated in that clock cycle. So this is what's happening here. We have an input and an address, and when the clock rising edge happened, the value in memory was updated. So that value was updated in the memory. that's what these colors are intending to show. So do we really have two memories? Do we really have instruction memory and data memory? Turns out that if you write to the data memory and then read from the instruction, you will see that you can change. It's actually the same memory. You can think of it, the best way to think of it is one memory with two ports. One memory, you're usually going to be using different addresses. There's going to be program memory. We spoke about that, the stack, the dynamic region, and then we have program memory. And they are usually different regions in the address. It's the same memory. And you have two ports. One is the instruction port. You pass it the program counter value, which is 64 bits, and it returns 80 bits, which is 10 bytes. And then for the data memory, you pass an address, which is also 64 bits, and you receive 64 bits, 8 bytes always. Okay. So I guess this exercise is something we can start with next time, but the question is, where will we need muxes? We have different instructions. And we still have 2 minutes. So where will we need muxes? There are different instructions, and if you pay attention at the encoding, register to register is a shorter instruction than the other ones when it comes to moving data. So then the question is, where will we need registers? And we have A, register file register number, and B, register file value inputs, PC, so C, PC registers input, and D, instruction memory. So this is like last time. Now, I think you agree that C will be necessary because we have different lengths for the instruction. Some of the instructions are 10. For example, this one is only two bytes long, while the other ones are 10 bytes long. So the PC will be either plus 2 or plus 10. So we'll have to have a mux. While for the others, it's a little more subtle. Thank you very much, guys.